I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. If you're like me and was a fan of Mad Men, you'll enjoy the new book from the writer Robin Brunet. Let's Get Frank, Canada's Madman of Advertising, is a biography of a legend in the Canadian advertising world, Frank Palmer. He was behind the well-known and acclaimed agency Palmer Jarvis, gaining renown across the country and around the world. He sold Palmer Jarvis to DDB, which became DDB Canada. He remains its chairman and CEO today. Mr. Brunet chronicles the growing up and rise of Palmer here in Vancouver to the heights of advertising. As a former employee and now rival, Chris Staples says, Palmer is, quote, the only Western Canadian ad man who went to Toronto and wound up owning the town. Palmer is also a colorful prankster, equally known for his practical jokes as his philanthropic work, not to mention his business acumen, which has done millions in billings for decades. I'll get Robin to tell us about Frank Palmer and more. Robin Brunet is a writer, editor, and journalist. He's written for over 100 magazines, including BC Business, The Hollywood Reporter, and Award Magazine. His previous book was the biography of Red Robinson, the last DJ. This new book is published by Douglas and McIntyre. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program from Langley, B.C., Robin Brunet. Mr. Brunet, good morning.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for contacting.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. As I said before we started, I finished reading the book just last night and enjoyed what I read because it's a fascinating life, and you give a marvelous sort of history of advertising in not only in this part of the world but in this country.
Thank you.
To sort of set the canvas as to where Frank Palmer is in his career, and just what he's done in his career, what's the size of the business that Palmer Jarvis was at, say at the height at its height in the 1970s, or I guess it's at the beginning in the 1970s? I mean, what sort of accounts did they have, and what does that sort of mean in terms of the billing, say?
Oh, God. You're asking me technical questions. In terms of the size, in the Palmer was unique in that he very quickly rose to the top. Mm. So when he began his career in the late 60s, his clients were very well-established local businesses, but local. But very quickly graduated to the McDonald's of the world, the fast food chains.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the major airlines, Greyhound buses, worldwide recognized brands. What that translated into billings.
I mean, we're talking of the millions of dollars, even in the
70s,
right?
Multi-millions of dollars. Yeah.
And Palmer Jarvis, that company is now a part of a bigger company, DDB Canada, and that's quite huge. We know of a few firms here in this town like Elevator, Rethink. What's DDB's place now in the country? I mean, it's just one of the biggest firms, right?
Globally, is one of the biggest firms. Yeah. We can't really. It's funny because Frank is still known. You say the words Palmer Jarvis in mixed company, and everybody knows that name.
Yeah.
You say DDB, and nobody knows that name. So it's very telling. It speaks well of Frank's ability to cement his own brand in the psyche of Canadians, because really Palmer Jarvis does not exist anymore in any business title representation. He sold that name to DDB a long time ago.
Yeah, and so he's still at DDB, right?
And he's still at DDB doing his thing.
Yeah. The upbringing I found fascinating because he is a Vancouver boy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so what sort of he's a multimillionaire now and very successful in business, but I mean that was not his upbringing, was it?
No, he had fairly modest, very modest upbringing. He had a stay-at-home mother. Boy, I may be getting that wrong. My memory's getting faulty. But your traditional white bread, 1940s, 1950s, working-class household. His dad worked for a bakery. making bread. And actually, that was one of Frank's first jobs, formal jobs, making money, was working alongside his dad in this very oppressive bread factory, which was kind of the equivalent of a production line, which I guess was one of the motivations for him to get ahead in life. He, he did not like his father's example of making a living.
And he learned early on, it's a wonderful story, the book's full of wonderful stories, but the one that just sticks out as we're chatting about bread is he learns marketing in terms of, because at the factory they have to package the bread for various stores, various restaurants, and so there's different packaging that they have to use, but it's essentially the same bread. And he's in the grocery store and the lady insists that one brand is better than the other.
And that's correct.
He's trying to tell her, no, it's all the same. But then at that moment, he gives up because he realizes just the power of, say, a package or a brand, right?
That's yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that story because that really does say it all. That kind of set the course for not only for Frank being a top-class advertising man, but also Frank realizing what it's all about at the end of the day, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, he's a great people person, too, I notice. I mean, you tell stories about people that worked with him. To get ahead in advertising or business or just relations with people, I mean, you have to sort of understand people very well. And he did that. I mean, there was no formal education, was there?
No, there wasn't. It was very much... He went to art school, but that was a waste of time because he was basically already employed. Very, very much old school. You know, you start trial by fire. You kind of push your way into, in his case, the graphic arts business, and worked early on for KVOS TV, applying his trade, and kind of moved sideways into the advertising business.
Yeah, and let's talk about him personally. I mean, you've gotten to know him, obviously, in the course of writing this book.
Yeah.
What's he like? I mean, he seems like a very likable guy, is he?
Yes. Physically imposing. I first met Frank about 5 or 6 years ago, and he was, I met him through a friend, and he was standing there. He's a very tall guy, and I describe him as kind of looking like an ex-prize fighter, you know, big, hefty, bald head, and he was dressed entirely in black. And so physically, I could see how he would cause people to, you know, move to the other side of the street if he's coming your way. But you really do find out within minutes that he's got a twinkle in his eye and very low-key way of speaking. A very frustrating way of speaking, I must say. It's not challenging to converse with Frank, but it's different because he will start talking about one topic and you will follow that train of thought. So you'll be talking about exactly the same topic, and in mid-sentence, he'll cut you off and shift to an entirely unrelated topic, and you start with that, and then 30 seconds later, you'll shift to something else. So it's quite a unique interaction you have if you meet Frank Palmer.
Yeah, it's not rudeness, if you will. It's really how his mind works, right? Because, I mean, he's into everything, I noticed, at his age, hip to all sorts of things in pop culture as well, right?
Yeah, it's not rude at all. His mind jumps, and so therefore his speech jumps. And I don't think he's got, it's funny because Frank and I hit it off early on. So I became an insider of sorts. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if he edits himself for the benefit of total strangers, because almost right off the bat, switch from being a stranger to a friend, or at least a work colleague, an intimate, if you will. And Frank tells stories that I couldn't print, put it that way. and he tells them quite freely. in public. Uh-huh. But I just don't know if he's that free with other people. So I don't know. But he's quite the character.
Yeah, and you talk a lot throughout the book of the hijinks. Because he is a prankster, he is a fun guy, he's a trickster. A lot of these hijinks, if you will, are worthy of Mad Men, the show.
Yeah, well, there was quite a few that I've said this several times in public, and it bears repeating that Frank liked Mad Men when it came out to a degree. He said the first season it was fairly representative of what went on, only we had a hell of a lot more fun misbehaving than you ever saw in the TV series. So that was the difference between fiction and Frank.
Yeah. But there's marvelous pranks that he pulls off in the book, and I mean, I don't even know where to start. Is there one that comes to mind for you?
It's rapidly become a classic for me. It was when he took a new employee, a new guy. So the new guy's a little bit nervous, trying to prove himself, doesn't know what he's in for. Takes him to lunch in a sports bar, and Frank has this key fob that if you push the button of the key fob, all the televisions in the establishment flick off. They lose power. So it was a hockey game, a very important one, and the place is packed with these rabid hockey fans and cheering for the home team. And every time the home team, it looked like they were going to score a goal, Frank pressed the button. All the screens in the establishment went blank. Crowd goes nuts, and Frank did this and the new employee knew what was going on, so he's sitting there in a cold sweat because the crowd's getting angrier and angrier. Frank must have disengaged these TV sets at least 8 or 9 times. I mean, there was a near riot going on, and this poor new employee, Frank, please stop. You're begging him to stop. You know, we're going to get killed if they find out it's here. So that was my favorite.
Yeah, and there are big ones too that he pulls off. I mean, with regards to McDonald's, he buys I guess McDonald's had reduced the price on the Big Mac, and he bought a billboard. He bought a bunch of billboards, I think.
Good memory. I forgot about that one. There's so many of them.
Reducing the price further.
Yeah, which sent the president of McDonald's he went nuclear when he saw that. Yeah, Frank. It's funny you say to Frank today, because he still plays his pranks, but the golden age of the pulling jokes is over. Nobody wants to spend the time and effort to pull off a really good practical joke. He's quite a connoisseur of that sort of thing.
So we mentioned Palmer Jarvis a moment ago, for people who grew up in this town, that's obviously an iconic brand in of itself. Generations ago, people read Wasserman and they knew about it. Me growing up, you read Mac Perry or Joy Metcalf. You would you'd hear about Frank Palmer and the business. The second name. George Jarvis. I mean, what was the relationship like professionally, personally?
Well, professionally, they got along very well because they had strengths that each other didn't. George was actually, and still is, very much people-oriented, so he handled the people. Frank was more like the graphics, ideas, deal-making man. And when George left the business, Frank very, very quickly had to become a people person. And he'll be the first person, I shouldn't say people person, he's very personable, but in dealing with people on a business level, he had to learn very, very quickly all the tricks, all the skills that George had. And on a personal level, they were opposites. Frank wanted to go out drinking every night. George wanted to go home with his family. And the split occurred simply because George, I shouldn't speak for him, but he had done all he'd wanted to do in that realm, and he wanted to move on. He wanted to do something else. And he will admit that Frank wore him out. And he doesn't say that in a derogative term. He doesn't say that very negatively. He says it simply as a matter of fact. You know, his energy is boundless, and George wanted to have new horizons, and you know, great for him, and he obviously did incredibly well. Now retired, of course. So it was a breakup of Laurel and Hardy. That's what they referred to it as, and they're good friends today.
Yeah. And then there's some other names, notable names. I mean, your previous book was about Red Robinson. Mm-hmm. His life intersects with Palmer's. Peter Fassbender, yeah, the former cabinet minister, once worked for Palmer, right?
Yeah, yeah. And initially did not like Frank Palmer at all. He couldn't believe how aggressive this man was. He could not believe to the degree that he would refuse to say no to anybody. Frank had to win at all costs, and the rules didn't apply to him. The rules applied to everybody else except Frank Palmer, and Peter Fassbender was daunted by this when he first encountered the whirlwind that was Frank Palmer, and still is today to a certain extent.
Yeah. Now, even competitors. I'm thinking of someone like Chris Staples, who once worked for Palmer. Uh-huh. They pretty much have laudatory things to say about him, don't they?
They certainly do, yeah, yeah. Well, they all come right. Well, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't think of anybody. There was a long list of people I wanted to interview for the book, and the only people that turned me down was not because they didn't want to talk about Frank. It was simply because they were out of the business, or they felt that they were out of the loop, or whatever. But even former rivals had, at the very least, grudging respect for Frank, put it that way.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things that I found fascinating was the story with regards to Woodward's, because Woodward's was a huge brand in this town, and responsible in large part for Palmer's notoriety in this town and in the community. And so when they go under, when they go bankrupt in the early 90s, that hit the Palmer business quite hard, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did. Because a lot of people are on the hook. Woodward's goes under, and everybody's all there. People are expecting monies, bills to be paid, and whatnot, you know, outstanding invoices, and Palmer steps up to the plate and takes care of it himself, which I question whether you'd find that sort of business strategy going on today. It takes intestinal fortitude to do something like that, and it's a question of whether you'd see that kind of an example today or not.
Yeah, because I guess when they go under, it's almost $1 million in terms of that's owed to, well, mm-hmm, all the media outlets like The Sun, like NW.
Where's my money? And to assume responsibility for that. Well, also, too, the example of when Frank was in a funk. I mean, it was of his own doing. He married her for a second time, and they split up after 6 weeks of marriage. And so he was in a business funk, and as it turns out, his bank came calling, you know, with billings way overdue, no collateral, whatever. And so the banks said, look, you know, we want you to sign over all of your personal assets to as security for all this moving forward, you know, on behalf of Palmer Jarvis. And Frank did so. He did it for the sake of his company and his employees. And again, it begs the question, would you find a head of a company doing that today? I mean, hopefully the answer is yes, but I haven't seen too many examples, or far and few between.
Yeah, and so he repaid all that money, $750,000, to the various outlets in this town. And he says to you in the book, even won an award for it, right?
I'd forgotten about that. Correct. He had received an award. I can't remember from who, but I would suggest it would have been well-deserved.
It speaks to his character, doesn't it?
It does. And you know, there's so many examples of Frank going, Frank sticking out his neck. Is there's so many examples of that, whether it's signing off on a bank loan on behalf of somebody else, a business bank loan, or lending money, or giving money, or investing in something that a partner of his truly believes. And none of it, he doesn't take any credit for that. In fact, Frank over the years is seen in some circles as an extremely strong soft touch because of his generosity. But you know,
he's a larger than life character, and his marriage, it's Marika, is that how you pronounce her name?
Yeah, Marika.
Yeah. What did that mean in terms of the changing Frank and in changing his lifestyle, if you will?
It meant that Frank had to, well, did he tone down his act?
Yeah.
No, he will say that he did. Marika tries her best to, for example, to get him to eat much better. Frank is a junk food. I'm quite happy going to McDonald's for a Big Mac, put it that way, which would drive Marika up the wall. She's tried to get him to retire. She's tried to get him to do this. She's tried to get him to do that. And Frank doesn't so much resist as it just flies over his head. It just doesn't register. So it's a very interesting marriage. I don't think he's toned down. Well, I mean, he's had to tone down in terms of he has an eye for the ladies.
Yeah.
And I don't think he could get away with this marriage, you know, behaving the way he did as a bachelor, put it that way.
Yeah.
But I don't see any evidence of Frank toning down one bit.
Yeah.
it's almost as if Marika's along for the ride in many circumstances.
We, not me in particular, but some other people might have encountered Marika on the Real Housewives show. I guess she was on an episode,
oh,
is that
God.
Right?
That's correct, yes, yeah, she was. And that's the one thing that managed to embarrass Frank. Even though it's kind of funny, you'll talk about you'll never be able to live that down. Well, fair enough, Frank, but you sure seem to enjoy yourself on the show.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
So I think that was a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah. It does, as I'm reading the book, it seems, I mean, you've captured him quite well in your book, but he seems to jump off the page because he's such a larger-than-life character that there's something else for him even now.
You mean motivating him?
Yeah, or not motivating him, but I mean, he's such a personality that you know, even television, I don't think could capture just how remarkable this guy is.
Yeah, I know. It's well, who knows? I don't know. You can see a movie being made of Frank and half the people thinking, oh, it's just, you know, that's over the top, it's too much. And it's too bad because Frank, I find in some of his TV interviews, you don't get the full force of his personality. So Frank himself wouldn't necessarily convey that sense of larger in life. But boy, you sure feel it when you're with him. Mm-hmm. And as for moving forward, I would say Frank is up. Frank has never grown up, so he genuinely does not see himself as a 78-year-old man. I mean, that's not a pretense and that's not a put-on.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely just simply does not acknowledge that. It's just, it doesn't occur to him. And so, therefore, he's got decades ahead of behaving and exactly the same way as he has.
Yeah, I mentioned a moment ago, I mean, how hip he is to popular culture.
Yeah.
I mean, even technology. I mean, he seems to want to understand it, whether he uses it or not. He seems to know that that's where it's at, and he surrounds himself with people definitely who know what's going on, and in that regard, I mean, it does keep him younger, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It does. I mean, he you go into his office, and it's all kids,
uh-huh,
and he interacts as if there is no. there's no generation gap. You know, it's the kids and Frank, and they get along perfectly well. And it's certainly, I mean, yes, it is a mentor kind of student scenario, but it never seems that way because they all behave as equals. And Frank is just as sharp in picking up knowledge as the kids are, so to speak. Shouldn't really call them kids, yeah. Young professionals, put mm-hmm. it that way. So it's a very refreshing thing to see.
Is Palmer happy with the book?
Very happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, very happy. It was 4 years. It was our fault. 4 years of shopping for a publisher through an agent, a literary agent, when in fact we should have simply just shopped directly to the publishers that made sense. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a long journey, but a very fruitful one. And he's tickled pink with the book.
Yeah, it's a good book to read. And if you're like me, that like Mad Men. And you love the social history of this town. I mean, it's all in there. What's next for you, Robin?
I've just finished a book. It's ostensibly the follow-up to Red Robinson's book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really about the old-time broadcasters of Vancouver and really what made them tick. And what made them tick was a ferocious, iconoclastic drive to succeed in a very, very strange business. And so it's going to be, if you can imagine the fun, if people did read Red's book and had fun with all the anecdotes, this is going to be five times the entertainment. So hopefully that'll be released in 2019.
Could you give us some of the names that you write about in that?
Yeah. Pat O'Day, Bruce Allen is back, Sterling Fox, Doc Harris, Fanny Kiefer, Gloria Makarenko, you name it, they're all there. And then, of course, people who are no longer with us, such as, Fred Latremoe mm-hmm. plays heavily in the book. Wayne Cox, the weatherman, is in there as well.
Yeah.
So it really runs the gamut, and the stories are, their stories are fall down funny
yeah.
in terms of what they did to succeed.
Well, you've done a great service with this book on Frank Palmer, and I can't wait to read that forthcoming one. And of course, the Red book was a big success.
Thank you.
I so appreciate your time today. This is enjoyable to chat.
Thank you so much for having me. It was enjoyable for me, too.
The book is called Let's Get Frank, Canada's Mad Men of Advertising. It's published by Douglas and McIntyre. Robin Brunet, its author, joined me on the line from Langley in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.